plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
The T-ball program usually heard at this time will be momentarily delayed for a special broadcast.
Prepare yourself for a trip through time, space, and the reality that you have known. When you enter into Willow's world. Willow Andreasen brings you the thought-provoking dialogue and news from around the world that shows your mind has no limitations. Take it away, Willow.
Good afternoon and welcome from a beautiful United Kingdom. My name is Willow Andreasen, also known as Sari Sunflower, in the Freedom Slips Revolution Radio chat room. And this is the Thursday, the 8th of April, 2021 edition of Willow's World. And before I get started with telling you what's happening on today's show, I just want to say a big, big thank you to Patrick, who was on before me with Not For Public Consumption. Always a very, very good show indeed. And also a big thank you to all the hosts here at the station for everything you all do, and to all the producers, the moderators, and the team who I'm just so humbled and honoured to be a part of. Now, I don't consider myself a significant cog in the wheel. I'm really not, because, I mean, there are those on the team who are exceptionally talented and very, very wonderful with the technology that's required to keep this station on air. But I'm humbled to be and honoured to be part of such an amazing team of people, dedicated, wonderful, loving, compassionate souls who do this because they love doing it. And they bend over backwards and beyond to ensure that this station, both its studios, remain on air as close to 24/7, every day, every week, of every month, of every year, to the best of our abilities. As I say, I'm just so humbled and honoured to be part of such an amazing team, and I'm even more humbled and honoured to call them my friends, and that's the management team. Thank you very, very much indeed, you lovely people, you. And also, huge outpouring of gratitude and much love as well to Liz Ringley, who continues to represent so much to the station. And to the individual whose vision, whose drive, whose prescience convinced him he needed to establish the safe and secure platform for free speech on New Year's Day 2011. He could see these times coming, folks. Many of us here at the station could. In fact, I'd say probably all of us here did. We just knew. But it was his intention to educate, elucidate, and emancipate, to equip listeners with the tools they required to construct their own vehicles for navigating their ways through the times we currently find ourselves facing, and we have been for the past year. And to do so as fearlessly as possible, and to do so as self-sufficiently as possible. We always find ourselves asking nowadays, what would he say about all that's going on? Well, we know what he would be saying, and disappointed that it's happened. Very disappointed, but given how frequently it's been signposted in the past decade, that he would still provide a message of hope to those listening, as well as a verbal kick up the backside. We miss him every single day. That's Mike Ringley, Nighthawk. We miss him every single day. Big, big thank you to Hawk. And someone else who has missed every single day, and I'm looking at his picture now as I say this, huge outpourings of gratitude and lots of love and hugs and kisses to my late other half, Briarios, who continues to represent so much in my life. Thank you very, very much indeed, my love. And also huge outpourings of gratitude and lots of love and hugs and kisses to some very, very, very special loved ones in my life. They know exactly who they are. They know exactly who they are. Huge hugs and lots of thanks to them. And to Azimuth, an individual who understands the strange paradox that is Willow and is unperturbed by it. Probably sounds more alarming than it is really, but big, big thank you to Azimuth. And to you amazing listeners too. I mean, we do this for you folks. We wouldn't be able to do this without you either. Totally, totally symbiotic relationship. And it is down to your kindness and your generosity that we are able to remain commercial free. The only promos you hear at the station during the breaks are concerning the station itself. The shows, station business. Sometimes you'll have hosts promoting their books, but the promos during the breaks are generally concerning, and mainly concerning actually, the station itself. And it is your kindness and generosity that enables us to do that. And we never, ever take your support for granted, folks. I mean, we never do. But we appreciate how challenging the past year has been on so many people. And the fact that you are supporting us through these challenging times, we are just humbled and immensely grateful. And we realise, and we always have done, that we are blessed with the most discerning and supportive of listeners. So huge gratitude to you all. Thank you very, very much indeed. Now, as I've just mentioned, we are entirely listener supported, folks. And if you'd like to support the station, you're not sure how, there are many ways you can do so, folks. And what I suggest you do is you visit our website, which you can reach by using one of two URLs. You could either use www.revolution.radio, that's www.revolution.radio, or www.freedomslips.com. I'll repeat that as well, www.freedomslips.com. And explore away on this fabulous website to your heart's content, folks. I mean, the lovely Monster 383, it was a fantastic website to begin with, as I've said, and he tinkers with it pretty much every day. He's just overhauled and redecorated, and it is fabulous in there. So if you haven't visited the chat room, if you haven't visited the website as well, go and have a look at it, folks. It really is absolutely stunning. And the places you need to explore, you'll find on the nav bar, which is at the top of the main homepage, and it stays at the top of the main homepage as well. So when you scroll down, it's there. So if you want to click on something to get there a little quicker, or because some of the pages are now on separate tabs, you can reach them quicker. Smith along on the nav bar is Store. That's a link to our Zazzle store, folks. Go and have a browse in there. Indeed, go and have a browse in there. Browse amongst the virtual shelves. We've got some lovely goodies in there. We've got T-shirts. We've got coffee mugs. We've got mouse mats. And they've not only got Hawk's original designs on them, but they've also got the station's general manager, Amad Painter's fantastic designs as well. And yeah, I'm on there at the moment, and they've got a 15% off at the moment, folks. 15, not 50, 15% off. There is a special code you need to enter when you go in and purchase an item, and it will deduct 15% for you. It's 15%. And yeah, so go and browse amongst the virtual shelves, folks. There's some lovely, lovely bits and pieces in there for you. So just go and have a look. And you'll be treating yourself. You'll be helping out the station as well. Next along, and penultimate from the end of a list, is donations. Now, this details, when you click on that, it opens up in a different tab, and it details all the other ways, bar two, methods that you can support the station. Top three, all have monthly support options, folks. And, of course, the top one is Patreon. We have a Patreon page. You need to be a patron in order to explore that page as well, folks. So not only is it a way of supporting the station, but you need to be a patron in order to explore the page. Next down is Donor Box, which is the alternative to PayPal. It's international in scope, easy to use, and user-friendly too. And again, monthly support option available on there, or you can use it as often as you wish. Now, if you have a credit or debit card, next down is you live in the US or Canada, next down is direct payment, North America only. Click on that, follow the simple instructions, and again, you can establish a monthly recurring support option, or you can use it whenever you wish. Next, we do accept support in the form of cryptocurrencies, folks, and those cryptos are Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. I'll repeat that: Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. QR codes are on the page, folks, so you point your device at it, do your fang. There's also some very long there's long numbers and letters on here as well, which I think you enter up if you don't have a QR reading device or something like that, I'm guessing. So yeah, we do accept cryptocurrency support as well. And yes, we still accept checks or money orders, folks, and they are to be made payable to Revolution Radio. That's two separate words. Revolution spelled R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. I'll repeat that. R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. And radio is spelled R-A-D-I-O. I'll repeat that as well. It's R-A-D-I-O. And they are to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman. Terry's first name is spelled T-E-R-R-Y. I'll repeat that, T-E-R-R-Y. And Ackerman is spelled A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. I'll repeat that as well. It's A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. And the mailing address is 1793. That's 1793 North Eden. Eden spelled E-D-O-N Road. And that's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, Michigan, M-I, 49227. So checks or money orders made payable to Revolution Radio are then to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman, at 1793 North Eden Road, Allen, Michigan, 49227. Now, details for the snail mail options and also Patreon are available on the main homepage as well. And I'm returning there right now, folks, because there's another way you can support the station as well. And I'm just refreshing the page because the lovely monster has reinstated, as I've been very excited about, he's reinstated the count, which is at the bottom of the page. And before he did the revamp, the count on the website had well surpassed the 500,000 views. And that was about three months ago. So I'm guessing we've well surpassed the 600,000 views, or probably heading well towards 750,000 by now as well. Realistically, again, a big, big thank you to all. But the counter had to be reset, and it currently reads 26,574. So a big, big thank you to all. And you're probably wondering, why is she telling us all this? Well, because you can advertise on this website, and we receive a healthy number of visitors per day, as you can see. And so for $25 a month, you can do so, and you need to contact the station's general manager, Amad Painter, for further details using the following email address, which is themadpainter13@yahoo.com. as the Mad Painter 13 at yahoo.com. I'll spell out that first bit for you. THEMADPAINTER13. I'll repeat that. THEMADPAINTER13@yahoo.com. And don't forget the archives, folks. That's third along on the nav bar. They're free. Free to access. Will be for the foreseeable. And, yeah, you can reach the archives either by clicking on the archives or going direct to its URL, which is www.revolutionradioarchives.com. That's www.revolutionradioarchives.com. And the details you need are the username and the password. Both are lowercase and both are case sensitive. The username is Rev Radio. That's Rev Radio, all one word. REVRADIO. I'll repeat that. REVRADIO. And the password is ROCKS exclamation mark. That's ROCKS exclamation mark. I'll repeat that as well. Or I'll spell it rather. ROCKS exclamation mark. That's ROCKS exclamation mark. Don't forget that exclamation mark, folks, because without it, you won't get in. I know that because I omitted it once and didn't get in. Again, a big, big thank you to all for your continued support. We are immensely grateful indeed. Thank you. So, what's happening on today's show? Well, before I tell you what's happening on today's show, there's somebody I want to wish a big happy birthday to. Former host of the station here. She was the host of Turtle Island show for many, many years here at the station. The lovely Tracy Kennedy. It's her birthday today. So, just want to wish Tracy a big happy birthday. And now what am I going to be telling you? I'm going to tell you what's happening on today's show. I'm going to wander into the chat room to say a big hello to everybody in there. And the first hour, as always, is going to be focusing on both the day's geek and global headlines. So I'll be wandering over to the Nexus of Nerddom. This is IO9 Gizmodo over the day's morning spoilers from the site, which makes up the geek headlines. And I'll be wandering east to Mother Russia for the day's global headlines from Russia Today. After the break at the top of the hour, the doors will be open to the cozy nook that is Willow's Poetry Corner, and we'll be returning to the world of 19th century American poetry for a study of one of its most innovative of talents. He was a novelist, short story author, and a war correspondent. He died at the tragically young age of 28, and his notable works include his novel from 1895, which I believe went on to become was a film, The Red Badge of Courage, and his poetry collection from the same year, which was called The Black Riders and Other Lines. He was born in Newark, New Jersey, and his name was Stephen Crane. And then the remainder of the show sees us wandering down the corridor to Willow's Earth Sciences Laboratory. Got four articles lined up today, folks, and the first of those returns to last year to learn more about the monitoring of carbon monoxide emissions from the California wildfires. I can never pronounce that word properly, can I? The second article focuses on research, which is bringing the 150-year-old Gibbs phase rule. If you're wondering what that is, well, it's a rule concerning the three states of water during the melting process. But it's research is bringing this into question. The third article discusses research undertaken by Penn State University, which suggests that dry forest margins, such as those found in the western United States, may be more resilient to climate change than previously believed. And then the final article pays a visit to the European Space Agency to examine how the planet's large water bodies, such as oceans and seas, are capturing, that's in quotes because it's from their article, more carbon than researchers expected. So got a lot to get on with, folks. I'm going to wander into the chat room now. Make sure you're all okay in there. So who's in there? Let's have a look. Rudolph's in the chat room, as well as Froz, a lovely host of ours. Mitzi is in the chat room. She hosts the Bridges Well Healing with the Elements of Life show on Studio B on Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Another fabulous host is in the chat room as well. That's the lovely Lizzie. She hosts two shows with the same name. That's Spirit Talk with Lizzie. First one is on Tuesdays on this very studio at 2 p.m. Eastern. And then she's also on Studio B on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern. Mona is in there as well. And of course, Mona is over the other side of the studio wall at the moment with today's Adventures of a Feral Hippie. And Mitzi Lou is in the chat room, as well as Mr. E. I hope I've got that right. Dryfly Guy's in the chat room, as well as Ames Marie. Factual Theory, of course, that's the fabulous Stephen Crawford. He's in the chat room as well. He hosts the Factual Theory live show on this studio on Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern. some weird person by the name of Sorry Sunflower is in the chat room, as well as Zio. Or Zio. That's with the Italian accent there. It's Italian for uncle, basically. Excuse me. A fabulous manager is in the chat room, of course. That's Lady Horse, a wonderful Lady Horse. And she's not only a manager here at the station and the treasurer of the station, but she also hosts the A Touch of Country show on Studio B on Saturdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Cat Dog Girl is in the chat room as well as Choppy Water. Haywood is in the chat room as well as Flippy. Comet is in as well as another fabulous manager. That's Pat Rabbit, who hosts the show that's just been on before this one. Midday Eastern, not for public consumption. Get that right. Dirt Engineer is in as well as Wally. Festus B is in as well as the voice of the overnights at the weekend. And sometimes during the week as well, that's Gerber. And Owner is in the chat room as well as another fabulous manager, Mr. Rowe, the omnipresent one. He hosts three shows on this studio, folks. Sundays, 5 p.m. Eastern, that's the Rowe Lounge. Has two 4 p.m. offerings. First one is on Monday, and it's called Crypto Corner. Tuesday's offering is called Rose Corner. And he also hosts the Reality Extraction show on Studio B later this evening, actually, 8 p.m. Eastern. So that's Thursdays. And he pops up wherever, does Ro? He doesn't warn you, he just pops up. Ivy, of course, that's another fabulous host of ours, Ivy West. She hosts the Voices on the Wind show on the studio on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. Stardust Man is in the chat room as well as Sassy Ass. Nessamania is in as well as Not Much To It. Popsicle Toes is in as well as Maced139 and Hammerhead is in. Who else has been in? Eagle Flower, another fabulous host of ours, she's been in. She hosts the Conversations with Eagle Flower show on the studio at 4 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays. Batsman has been in as well as Just Me. But if you want to come in and join us, folks, please do. It'd be good to see you. The more, the merrier. It'd be good to see you. Thank you. So, time for the geek headlines, folks. Wandering over to the Nexus of Nerddom. This is IO9 Gizmodo for today's selection, which has been compiled, as always, by James Whitbrook and Gordon Jackson. It was posted up today. And it's headlined, "The First Powerpuff Set Pictures Tease Some Classic Costumes." Indeed, they're bringing that back, aren't they? So Borderlands cast continues to expand like some kind of talent black hole. The Tomorrow War is taking Chris Pratt to Amazon. Winona Earp's finale teases good news for Wayhorts. Plus, what's next on for All Mankind? Black Lightning and Nancy Drew. Spoilers away! So we start with Borderlands. So professional bodybuilder Olivier Richters has been cast as the bandit leader, Crom, in Eli Roth's Borderlands movie. Oh, him. Okay. Next is the Demon of Brownsville Road. So Deadline reports Minnie Sheedan is attached to write a film adaptation of Bob Cranmer and Erica Manfred's The Demon of Brownsville Road for New Line. The book details the allegedly true first-hand account of a family who move into a haunted house in Pittsburgh. Next is The Tomorrow War. So Deadline also reports Chris McKay's The Tomorrow War, starring Chris Pratt, is scheduled for release on Amazon July 2nd, 2021. Next is Cruella. So Disney has released a new poster of Emma Stone as Cruella de Vil. I think this is a prequel, isn't it? There you go. Indeed they have. Looks rather fabulous. Next is The Reckoning. So Shudder has released a new trailer for its May 13th release of Neil Marshall's The Reckoning. Not available on here at the moment. Death Rink is next. So a maniac wearing an alien mask, presumed to be the spirit of a teenager killed on the premises years earlier, stalks the employees of a roller skating rink in the trailer for Death Rink, coming to VOD on May the 11th. Sounds an interesting premise. Next is Powerpuff. So TMZ has our first look at the live-action Powerpuff Girls from the CW's new series. Click through for a video of Chloe Bennett's Blossom taking flight. Oh, it's a live-action one, is it? Okay. Oh, yes, of course it is. Indeed, they are. And there's also a new look at the new. There's also a look at the new logo as well, which isn't too dissimilar to the old one. Next is Black Lightning. So the FBI pays Black Lightning a visit in the synopsis for the Book of Ruin, Chapter 3, which is airing April 19th. So here's the synopsis. The FBI pays Jefferson, played by Cress Williams, a visit. Meanwhile, Anissa, played by Nafessa Williams, surprises Grace, played by Chantal Thuy. Christine Adams, James Remar, Marvin Jones III, and Jordan Calloway also star. The episode is written by Andre Edmonds and directed by Billy Woodruff. And next is For All Mankind. So Spoiler TV has pictures from episode 8 of season 2, and here's to you. You've got to head over to Spoiler TV to see more if you're interested, but if you don't want to be spoiled, don't. Next is The Nethers. So Spoiler TV also has a look at episode 3 of The Nethers, which is called Ignition. It also says if you want to find out more, then you can go there and visit the site, but if you don't want to be spoiled, don't. Next is Nancy Drew. So Nancy Drew runs afoul of a contract killer in the trailer for the trail of a missing witness. And finally is Winona Earp. So a sneak peek at the series finale of Winona Earp promises a happy ending for Wayhawk fans. It's on there. If you don't want to be spoiled, folks, don't look at it. I'll post a link there in the chat room. And CJ's just come into the chat room, as well as Mario. Mario, of course, hosts a show on Studio B twice a week. Both are called This, That and the Other. Both are on at 6 p.m. Eastern. And they are on Monday and Thursday. Have I got time to have a look at the... Yes, have a quick look at... excuse me, a quick look at Kotaku, shall we? Excuse me. Yeah, headlines from Kotaku. Excuse me a minute. There we go. That's a bit better. So Pet Food Tycoon's takeover of GameStop is nearly complete. Resident Evil Reverse beta really needs a green herb. Outriders' first major patch will nerf the Trickster. Nerf, that is. Deathloop delayed to September. There's a spring 2021 anime guide available for those who are interested. And the Nintendo download, 31 new games for the Switch this week. The Alex Kidd remake is looking sharp. Final Fantasy VII Advent Children makes its 4K Ultra HD debut on June the 8th. For April 1st, cosplayers around the world had a convention in their pajamas. Intel, a white nationalism slider ain't it. A top female streamer becomes part owner of massive esports organization 100 Thieves. Smuggled Nvidia cards found after high-speed boat chase. And Pokemon's intro remade with stock footage. I mean, I don't know. Have I got time to have a look at any of these? Or should I just have a quick look at the... let's have a look at the smuggled in video card, shall we? Got time. This was posted up yesterday, authored by Luke Plunkett. So only a week after a Chinese bust involving cheap makers and luxury cars, authorities have seized hundreds of smuggled NVIDIA cards after a speedboat chase in the waters near Hong Kong International Airport. As Tom's Hardware have translated from Chinese outlet TVB News, over the weekend police saw a fishing boat anchored suspiciously close to the airport at 2 a.m. and upon investigating found men moving cargo from the fishing boat onto a nearby speedboat. As the police approached, the shady men hopped on the speedboat and sped away towards mainland waters, with the cops pursuing in a high-speed boat chase. The smugglers managed to escape, but authorities then doubled back and searched the fishing boat, where they found shark fins, smartphones, and up to 300 unidentified graphics cards. While not carrying any markings, it's believed the cards are NVIDIA CMP 30HX GPUs, made specifically for crypto mining, which, while not very good at their job, are nevertheless in high demand at the moment, with global shortages affecting the supply of more desirable hardware. So there you go. I'll just share that one there in the chat room for you. There you go. So, I'm going to wander east now to Mother Russia for the day's global headlines from Russia today. And we start off with the world news main headline on the world news section, which is mandatory vaccines are necessary in democratic society. Don't infringe human rights, EU court rules. So making children get jabs for common diseases is necessary in democratic society and is in their best interests, the European Court for Human Rights ruled on Thursday in a landmark decision against anti-vaxxers. Clashes between Myanmar military and protesters reportedly leaves 11 dead as junta removes ambassador to UK. So fresh violent clashes in Myanmar have reportedly left 11 dead after anti-coup activists fought back against troops deployed to disperse protesters a day after the military junta removed the country's ambassador to the UK. COVID segregation. arrests a Venezuelan mayor in hot water after placing warning signs on homes of people who tested positive for virus. A mayor in central Venezuela has become the target of a government inquiry after he began posting red markings on homes with COVID-positive residents, apparently as a way to warn locals to stay away. Hungry Eyes, vaccinating over 40% of population by end of April, starts lifting coronavirus restrictions. So Hungary expects to vaccinate more than 40% of its population by the end of the month, a top official has said. Budapest has already begun lifting COVID-19 restrictions after it met the 25% vaccination goal. Do Chinese warships go to the Gulf of Mexico? Beijing blames Washington's aggression for Taiwan tensions. Chinese Foreign Ministry has dismissed accusations that Beijing is engaging in intimidation and coercion in Taiwan and called on the US to recognize the One China principle and refrain from coercive practices. Italy should stop vaccinating under 60s against COVID and prioritise elderly, PM says. So Prime Minister Mario Draghi has said that Italy should stop administering COVID-19 vaccines to people under 60 years old in a major shake-up of the country's immunisation programme that aims to protect elderly citizens. And Israel tells International Criminal Court it doesn't have authority to investigate crimes in Palestinian territories. So Tel Aviv has formally responded to the International Criminal Court's plans to investigate possible war crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories, claiming the tribunal does not have jurisdiction over Israel. And incoming asteroid to pass between Earth and the Moon, football field-sized space rock to follow. Yeah, I'll be looking at this one. So as NASA's OSIRIS-REx probe bids farewell to the asteroid Bennu, closer to home, the space agency has issued warnings about two other space rocks set to come a little close for comfort to the Earth. Former Muslim Brotherhood leader sentenced to life in prison over incitement of violence in 2013 protests. So Mahmoud Izzat, who served as the acting leader of the Muslim Brotherhood for several years, has been sentenced to life in prison for inciting violence and supplying firearms during the 2013 Egyptian protests. A mood disorder diagnosis. So scientists developed blood tests to identify mental health issues, including depression. Feeling depressed or up one moment, down the next? Soon doctors could have a blood test to diagnose mental health disorders, thanks to research that points to quicker treatments for those suffering from depression. And French clergymen arrested over COVID lockdown breaking mass that saw hundreds of churchgoers flout rule of six. So a parish priest and another clergyman have been arrested in Paris after breaking not just bread, but also France's COVID-19 rules by holding Easter mass for up to 280 worshippers, many of whom were not wearing face masks. Quite a lot there I'd like to cover, but I'm going to look at the main article and also the asteroid that is threatening to... Well, they say it's threatening Earth. It's going to come between the Earth and the Moon. But anyway, so we're going to the EU now. So making children get jabs for common diseases is necessary in democratic society and is in their best interests, the European Court for Human Rights ruled on Thursday in a landmark decision against anti-vaxxers. It's the first time the ECHR has ruled on mandatory vaccinations for children against common diseases. While the case dealt with the Czech Republic's laws that require skilled children to have jabs against diseases like whooping cough, tetanus and measles, it has implications when it comes to compulsory COVID jabs. Nicolas Hervier, a legal expert specialising in the ECHR, said the ruling reinforces the possibility of compulsory vaccination under the current coronavirus pandemic conditions. A panel of judges ruled 16-1 that the Czech health policy that prevented unvaccinated children from attending nurseries or schools was consistent with the best interests of children. The measures could be regarded as being necessary in a democratic society, the court ruled. So here's a quote. The objective has to be that every child is protected against serious diseases through vaccination or by virtue of herd immunity. The judges dismissed the appeal brought by six Czech nationals who were fined for failing to comply with the mandatory vaccination rules or whose children were denied admission to nursery school for the same reason. The parents had claimed that the mandatory jab rules violated their human rights. The objective had to be to protect every child against serious diseases, the court ruled. It said that the need for compulsory vaccination in the Czech Republic represented the national authorities' answer to the pressing social need to protect individual and public health against diseases, and to guard against any downward trend in the rate of vaccination among children. The court said that while mandatory vaccinations raise sensitive issues, the value of social solidarity to protect the health of all members of society, particularly those who are especially vulnerable, required everyone to assume a minimum risk by having jabs. There was no immediate reaction from the six, who appealed the case to the ECHR. I'll share that one there in the chat room. And next is the asteroid situation. So space rock segment on Thursday for a change. So as NASA's OSIRIS-REx probe bids farewell to the asteroid Bennu, closer to home, the space agency has issued warnings about two other space rocks set to come a little close for comfort to the Earth. On April 10th, the asteroid 2021 GT3, measuring 19 metres across, which is roughly the length of a bowling lane, is due to pass between the Earth and the Moon at a distance of just 255,886 kilometres, or 30 times the length of the Great Wall of China. For reference, the average distance between our planet and its natural satellite is just 385,000 kilometres, so this flyby is a little close for comfort. Mercifully, the asteroid likely doesn't pose a direct threat to the Earth, though it does serve as yet another reminder of just how vulnerable the planet may be to cosmic debris. Less than 1 month later, however, an arguably more intimidating rocky foe is due to buzz the planet, as asteroid 2021 AF8, estimated to measure anywhere from 260 to 580 metres, is expected to pay a visit to the Earth's backyard. Travelling at a whopping 9 kilometres per second, the potentially hazardous AF8, as NASA describes it, is expected to pass at up to 3.4 million kilometres from the Earth, so humanity will live to fight another day, for now, at least. Lest anyone forget, world-famous French physician and astrologer Nostradamus, with his predilection for predictions, prophesied that the Earth would be struck by an asteroid in 2021. According to some interpretations of his admittedly open to interpretation doomsday diatribes. Only time will tell, but thankfully NASA and other world space agencies are keeping a close eye on the skies for potential threats. Whether humanity could handle them is another matter. There you go, I'll just share that one there in the chat room as well. So yeah, I think we're safe. Wandering over to the USA headline now, USA News headlines, and have a look at these and see what's going on in the US. Main headline is Ghost Guns and Red Flags. So Biden calls gun violence an epidemic, fires off anti-gun executive orders. So President Joe Biden has fired off a number of anti-gun executive orders, including a directive on controversial red flag laws. The orders fall short of comprehensive regulation, which Biden has called on Congress to enact. Boundaries gone. So California prison officers and inmates reportedly concerned at transfer of trans convicts based on chosen gender. So US officials have started approving requests from transgender inmates asking to be transferred between male and female jails. With over 260 such requests received, the move is reportedly opposed by other prisoners and officers. And YouTube removes roundtable video featuring Florida Governor DeSantis and anti-lockdown health experts citing terms of service. So YouTube has taken down a video of a public health roundtable hosted by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and a number of medical experts voicing skepticism about lockdowns, saying that it violated the platform's community standards. Meets the definition of a crime victim. So Florida court rules police can hide officers' identity after on-duty shootings. So police departments in Florida may conceal the identities of officers involved in shootings and other violent encounters on duty, an appeals court has ruled, reversing an earlier decision that kept such records open to the public. Judge rules nude photos of ex-Congresswoman Katie Hill, who resigned after sex scandal, are a matter of public concern. A judge has tossed a lawsuit by former Representative Katie Hill, ruling that her nude photos that were leaked to the media amid claims she had affairs with staffers were not revenge porn, but covered by the freedom of speech. Democrats saw ahead of Republicans in party identification poll, but they have little to celebrate, with independents on the rise. A new poll suggested Americans are leaving the Republican Party in droves. Democrats aren't doing much better, however, and as both parties struggle to define themselves, independents are on the rise. A university student ordered to undergo psychological evaluation and then suspended after questioning definition of microaggressions. So a student who was suspended by the University of Virginia for daring to ask questions during a presentation about microaggressions has taken the institution to court, with his story sparking disbelief and anger on social media. Megalomania or protecting users? New Twitch policy prepares to deplatform for off-platform activity. So live streaming platform Twitch is dramatically expanding the list of behaviours that get users banned. Its new policy not only governs all offline behaviour, but bizarrely purports to be an arm of the digital justice system. Health and safety nightmare. So Texas governor demands closure of migrant child facility after claims of sexual abuse. So migrant children held at an improvised facility in San Antonio have been sexually assaulted and neglected, Texas Governor Greg Abbott said, calling on the Biden administration to shut it down and move the minors somewhere safer. Biden's Commerce Secretary says Trump tariffs helped save American jobs and indicate she'll keep them. So the much maligned tariffs on aluminium and steel imposed by the Trump administration actually saved American jobs and may be kept to counter China, Joe Biden's Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo told reporters. Idaho bans vaccine passports, becoming third U.S. state to do so. So Governor Brad Little has issued an executive order banning so-called vaccine passports in his state. Amid a national row over the passports, Idaho is the third state to ban them. So which ones we're going to look at here? There's quite a few here I'd like to look at. I'm going to look at the main headline and also the university student who was ordered to undergo psychological evaluation. So main headline is Ghost Guns and Red Flags. Biden calls gun violence an epidemic, fires off anti-gun executive orders. So President Joe Biden has fired off a number of anti-gun executive orders, including a directive on controversial red flag laws. The orders fall short of comprehensive regulation, which Biden has called on Congress to enact. Gun violence in this country is an epidemic and an international embarrassment, Biden declared on Thursday, in a speech announcing six executive orders aimed at tightening up the US's gun laws. The orders were revealed by the White House a day earlier, and include a directive asking the Justice Department to crack down on untraceable ghost guns and issue model red flag legislation, and a proposed restriction on shoulder braces for pistols. Biden's actions come in the aftermath of two prolific mass shootings in the US, in Boulder, Colorado, and Atlanta, Georgia, last month. However, Biden's orders do nothing to achieve his campaign promises to ban so-called assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, to hold gun manufacturers legally accountable for shooting deaths, and to close the Charleston loophole, which allows customers to buy firearms if their FBI background check is not completed within 3 days. Such actions are the purview of Congress, and with Democrats holding the thinnest majority in the Senate, are unlikely to pass. Appealing to Republicans, Biden insisted that gun control is not a partisan issue among the American people, and urged the GOP to help pass two separate bills already passed by the House of Representatives. One bill would extend background checks, another would extend these checks to private sales. So despite Biden's appeal to bipartisanship, gun control is a bitterly divisive issue in the US. Even something as apparently popular as red flag legislation is mired in controversy. Former President Donald Trump supported, then opposed such legislation, which would allow courts to keep guns out of the hands of those judged a risk to themselves or others. With Biden's model red flag laws based on tips from these people's family and friends, conservative commentators have warned that these laws may be used by Democrats to disarm their political opponents. Furthermore, they argue that red flag laws violate the constitutional right to due process and allow the courts to disarm people who haven't been convicted of any crime. Biden reassured conservatives that nothing he proposed impinges in any way on the Second Amendment, but in the same breath insisted that no amendment to the Constitution is absolute, a statement that plenty of Republicans and legal scholars would disagree with. Biden is not the first Democrat to find his push for gun control stymied by Congress. Barack Obama had a wider majority in the Senate when he attempted and failed to pass the sweeping assault weapons ban in 2013. Like Biden, Obama relied instead on executive orders to restrict firearms rights, none of which drastically affected gun owners. Nevertheless, Biden insisted on Thursday that his executive orders are just the start of a wider campaign to crack down on senseless gun violence. There you go. I'll just share that one there. Chat room. And yeah, we're going to have a look at this individual who was the university student who was ordered to undergo psychological evaluation and then suspended after questioning definition of microaggressions. So a student who was suspended by the University of Virginia for daring to ask questions during a presentation about microaggressions has taken the institution to court, with his story sparking disbelief and anger on social media. The bizarre saga begins in October 2018, when Kiran Bhattacharya, a student at the University of Virginia School of Medicine, attended a panel discussion on the subject of microaggressions. During a Q&A session, Bhattacharya asked the presenter, an assistant dean of the university, to clarify what constitutes a mini form of aggression. According to an audio recording of the exchange, the student thanked the dean for her presentation before launching into his query. Is it a requirement to be a victim of microaggression that you are a member of a marginalized group, he asked. The presenter said that it was not a requirement, but Bhattacharya was unsatisfied with her answer, noting that a slide in her presentation defined microaggressions as negative interactions with members of marginalized groups. The pair then went back and forth for several minutes, with the student arguing that so-called microaggressions couldn't be distinguished from an unintentionally rude statement. While one might expect that asking questions and making counter-arguments would be routine at universities, the incident apparently set off alarm bells for an assistant professor who helped organise the event, who submitted a report known as a professionalism concern card, claiming that Bhattacharya had run afoul of university policy. The professor described his questions as antagonistic and claimed that his frustration and anger had prompted another panellist to step in and defuse the situation. The report then found its way to an assistant dean in the medical school, who emailed Bhattacharya and offered to meet to help him understand and be able to cope with unintended consequences of mock conversations. Meanwhile, Bhattacharya's case had caught the attention of other bigwigs at the university. The Academic Standards and Achievement Committee learned of the incident and voted to send the student a written reminder to show respect for faculty. He was also urged to seek counselling. However, that recommendation soon became an order, as Bhattacharya was later told that he must be psychologically evaluated before returning to classes. When Bhattacharya repeatedly sought to understand what he had done wrong and what he was accused of, administrators doubled down. At a hearing, he was accused of being extremely defensive and was ordered to reform his aggressive, threatening behaviour. The university ultimately decided to suspend him, claiming that he was guilty of aggressive and inappropriate interactions in multiple situations. 2 months after the infamous microaggression panel, Bhattacharya was ordered by university police to leave campus. Since then, Bhattacharya has been seeking to rectify his seemingly unprecedented treatment in the courts. He filed a lawsuit arguing that UVA violated his First Amendment rights by retaliating against him simply for sharing his views on a subject. The university requested the court dismiss the case, but the district court judge at the end of March ruled that the suit could go forward. Reason.com's Robbie Soave, who reported the story, described the university's behaviour as pure Kafka. And here's a tweet from Robbie Soave, which is, over a period of several weeks, a student, Kieran, repeatedly asked administrators to explain what he had done that was a crime. They then treated his mounting frustration and confusion as evidence he was unstable. It's pure Kafka. Others seemed to agree and even compared the university's use of psychological evaluation to tactics deployed against dissidents in the Soviet Union. Indeed, somebody has indeed tweeted that. Some were more restrained with their reactions. One commenter suggested that the tale was so outlandish that there must be more to the story, and suggested that the university's perspective on the lawsuit was badly needed. Okay, I'll just share that one there in the chat room as well. And next is the UK news. Let's have a look. UK news. Start with the main headline. Excuse me a minute. Sorry about that. Main headline is UK government calls for dialogue after anger over Sinn Féin funeral and Brexit sparks riots in Belfast. So Belfast was rocked by a night of violence amid a spike in sectarian tensions in Northern Ireland. London has expressed concern over the unrest and urged loyalists and Republicans to settle their differences peacefully. A bus torched by a petrol bomb as it drives along Belfast Road amid ongoing Northern Ireland protests. So a double-decker bus has been completely destroyed after it was set alight by protesters in Belfast, as Northern Ireland was hit by another night of violence amid heightened sectarian tensions in the region. More than enough Pfizer and Moderna doses for under 30, says Health Sec, as UK drops AstraZeneca for younger generation. So the British Health Secretary has allayed fears that the UK's vaccination programme will slow down, claiming there is an ample supply of alternative vaccines after the AstraZeneca jab was canned for under 30s amid blood clot returns. And UK to offer under 30s, alternative COVID-19 vaccine amid evidence linking AstraZeneca jab to blood clots. So, yeah, just mentioned that. So UK seeks to curb big tech dominance with launch of new regulator. So a new UK regulator tasked with keeping an eye on tech giants has begun operations, and its first assignment is to draft a code of conduct aimed at improving interactions between platforms and news publishers. Dialogue, not violence. So Northern Ireland Secretary calls for calm before Belfast visit after sixth night of violence. It's the sixth consecutive night of violence in Northern Ireland in which a bus was hijacked and burnt to the ground. It's been condemned by the UK government's Northern Ireland Secretary ahead of his visit to Belfast on Thursday. Vaccination drive contributed to 60% drop in COVID-19 infection rates in England, study shows. So the UK's COVID-19 vaccine rollout has started to have a positive impact on public health, a newly released study has found. Virus infection rates have dropped sharply among the elderly, the most vaccinated population cohort. And UK Health Secretary denies British government secretly exported 717,000 AstraZeneca jabs to Australia despite shortage at home. British Health Secretary has dismissed rumours that the government played a role in the secret export of 717,000 COVID-19 vaccines reportedly flown to Australia from the UK, despite London experiencing its own jab shortage. Woke history or telling it as it is? It's a National Trust under fire for encouraging children to write poems critical of British Empire. National Trust has been accused of bad-mouthing the UK's cultural heritage after reportedly giving historic house tours to school children and inviting them to write verses about how what they saw was linked to imperialism. Extinction Rebellion activists arrested outside Barclays London HQ after breaking windows to protest banks' fossil fuel financing. So a number of climate activists have been arrested by London police after the Extinction Rebellion group held an early morning protest at the headquarters of Barclays Bank, Europe's largest financier of the fossil fuel industry. And UK starts rollout of Moderna COVID-19 jab ahead of schedule, with 5,000 doses distributed to vaccination centres in Wales. So the COVID vaccine developed by Moderna has become the third jab to be rolled out in the UK, with inoculations starting in Wales on Wednesday. Britain faces an acute shortage of shots as India and the EU tighten export controls. The main one I'm certainly going to be looking at what's happening in Northern Ireland. Certainly. I wish I could say I was surprised by this reigniting, but I'm not. Belfast was rocked by a night of violence amid a spike in sectarian tensions in Northern Ireland. London has expressed concern over the unrest and urged loyalists and Republicans to settle their differences peacefully. Footage from RT's video agency Ruptly shows a fleet of police vehicles racing down a street in Northern Ireland's capital with sirens blazing on Wednesday evening. In one clip, police in riot gear are seen gearing up as loud bangs can be heard nearby. Earlier in the day, rioters hurled petrol bombs and torched a bus. Officers who arrived at the scene were reportedly attacked with projectiles. The unrest is believed to have been triggered by anger over the decision not to prosecute Sinn Féin members who attended the June funeral of senior IRA figure Bobby Storey. Around 2,000 mourners attended the event, seemingly running afoul of COVID-19 measures that restricted large gatherings. Tensions had already been inflamed among the loyalist community over the UK's Brexit deal with the EU, which requires checks at ports and airports for some goods arriving from Great Britain. At least 10 arrests have been made and more than 40 officers have been injured in clashes that have occurred since the violence broke out. Speaking on Thursday, British Health Secretary Matt Hancock said that the scenes unfolding in Northern Ireland were concerning and called for de-escalation. Why is Matt Hancock commenting on this? He's the health secretary. Anyway, carrying on. Of course, we're concerned the route out of this is dialogue, and I'd encourage all sides to engage in that dialogue, he said. Irish Prime Minister Michael Martin echoed a similar sentiment and urged the two governments and leaders on all sides to work together to defuse tensions and restore calm. So there we go. I'll share that one there in the chat room, folks. Go. Not really, don't really have time to do anything else. So what I recommend you do is, news-wise, that is. So recommend you go and get yourself a cup of tea, cup of coffee, folks, because after the break, I'll be opening the doors to the cozy, this is Willow's Poetry Corner, where we'll be undertaking a study of 19th century American poet Stephen Crane. And then we'll be wandering down the corridor to Willow's Earth Sciences Laboratory for four very interesting articles, which cover a variety of earth sciences related topics. We're returning to the California wildfires for one of those last year for the monitoring of carbon monoxide emissions. And also we're looking at the 150-year-old Gibbs phase rule, and also how dry forest margins such as those found in Western United States may be more resilient to climate change. And we're paying a visit to ESA for the final article to examine how the planet's large water bodies are capturing more carbon than researchers expected. So get yourselves a cup of tea, cup of coffee, folks. I'll be back with you after the break. See you in a bit.
Onto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Second hour of the Thursday, the 8th of April 2021 edition of Willow's World. My name is Willow Andreasen, also known as Sorry Sunflower, in the Freedom Slips Revolution Radio chat room. And it's just turned 8 o'clock in the evening over here in the UK, which means it's just turned 3 o'clock in the afternoon over on the East Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time, 1 o'clock in the afternoon Mountain Time, and it's just turned midday over on the West Coast. Hopefully I can still be heard because I can just hear a lot of sort of weird, sort of, it sort of sounds like I'm in an air tunnel, but hopefully that's not what you're hearing. Hopefully it's not. It's just turned midday over on the west coast of the US. And looking at the time, it's probably around about between 4 and 6 o'clock in the morning in Australia. And it's probably around about 8 o'clock in the morning in New Zealand. But wherever you are in the world, I hope that life is being reasonably kind to you. And it's all right. It sounds all right. Yeah, it's all right. I've just checked. Yeah, it sounds okay. As I said, wherever you are in the world, I hope that life is being reasonably kind to you, regardless of the ongoing lockdown lunacy, which is being covered during the first hour. And as I have said many a time, and I'm not being trite about this, I'm really not. And I do get very annoyed with people who think I am, but it's essential to remember that there is still much beauty to behold in the world, that it is vital to retain a sense of humour and to ensure that spark of joy is not dulled or extinguished in any way, regardless of the draconian efforts to do so. More vital now than ever to retain a sense of all three. And yeah, it may be difficult at times. Yes, it may be challenging at times. Yes, I can understand that. I really can. But try to remember there is much, much beauty out there to behold, folks. There really is. We've got the spring emerging and unfolding here in the Northern Hemisphere. Yep, I mean, the weather can be a little bit unpredictable, but the weather is what it is. The weather does what it does. And I know that it's autumn in the Southern Hemisphere, again, a very beautiful time of the year. If you're able to do so, go out and enjoy the beauty that nature has to offer. The gorgeous colours that surround you, both in spring and in autumn. Retain a sense of humour, folks. Don't feel guilty about laughing about something if you feel joy. As long as it's not at the expense of someone else, don't be afraid to laugh. Watch something funny or a favourite comedy of yours on television or DVD or streaming service, whatever it is you use. Listen to a favourite comedy of yours. There's plenty of funny radio shows around. Let's face it, this show can be a comedy at times, can't it? But again, if you feel that spark of joy is dimming, take gentle steps to nurture it back to a healthy, vibrant flame. The best way to do that, really, I find, is creatively. Borrow your children's colouring books and colouring crayons and colour in a picture, something you haven't done for years. All of us get given art sets at some point, don't we? That you never open, you keep meaning to open. Well, open them. Use them. You've got some paints. Got a canvas. It doesn't even have to be a canvas. I mean, as long as it's good quality paper. Channel your inner Bob Ross. You wanted to write a book years ago? Well, do it. Does listening to the poetry on this show inspire you? Write your own. Do you fancy being the next cordon bleu chef or whatever it is nowadays? I have no idea what chefs are around nowadays. I've no idea at all. In my day, it was Keith Floyd. Loved Keith Floyd. But I like the Hairy Bikers as well. Like the Hairy Bikers. Go and do some cooking. Cook yourself some good old soul food, which is different in every country, I know. Every country's definition of soul food is different. And bake some cakes. Make yourself those little cornflake cakes, something you haven't done since you were a child. If you just bake the cakes with your mother or your grandmother, or your father or grandfather. Do that again. If you've got the chance, go out for a walk. Enjoy the beauty that nature has to offer. If you've got the chance to do that. If not, open the window and inhale that air. You can start growing your own plants indoors. Windowsills are wonderful propagators. But whatever you do, you take those steps to reignite that spark of joy within you. And take all steps you can, gently initially, to nurture that into a healthy, vibrant flame. And then you keep nurturing it, and it will become a veritable fire within. And of course, it's not only you that reaps the benefits of that inner fire, folks. Those around you do as too. And you know what? There's no amount of social distancing that can actually prevent that from being felt by others. And if you feel alone, come and join us in the chat room, folks. There's always somebody in the chat room any time of day. Come in and join us. Come in and join us. We'd be glad to see you. Really, really glad to see you. Now, you're listening to this strange old show of mine on the world's largest listener-supported station, which is Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Folks, we are entirely listener-supported and, again, commercial-free, thanks to your kindness and your generosity. We are immensely, immensely grateful to you all indeed for supporting us. We are truly, truly blessed. We never, ever take your support for granted. And every single dollar or cent that is donated, we make it work hard, folks. We make it all count. And we're constantly finding ways to improve what we do. And If you'd like to support us and you're not sure how, I recommend you visit our website. Folks, a fabulous website. So you can reach it using one of two URLs, which is either www.revolution.radio or www.freedomslips.com. We'll take you there. Explore away to your heart's content on this fabulous website that's been established by and is lovingly maintained by the amazing Monster 383. And all sorts you can explore away on there, folks. Store, that's a link to our Zazzle store. Well worth browsing the virtual shelves in there today, folks, because there's a 15% off offer with a code available. So well worth going and browsing through our store. You can treat yourself to a nice new coffee mug or a nice new mouse mat or a nice new T-shirt. Next along is donations, folks. That provides pretty much every other way you can help the station as well, bar two. Top three, Patreon, Donor Box, and Direct Payment North America only, all have monthly support options available. You have to be a patron as well in order to explore our Patreon page as well, so you can do that by clicking on Patreon. Donor Box, that's the viable international alternative to PayPal. Works very, very well indeed. It's very user-friendly. Again, monthly support available, or you can use it as frequently as you wish. If you have a credit or debit card and happen to live in the US or Canada, Direct Payment North America only is also a very, very good option as well. Again, you can set up something monthly or use it as frequently as you wish. We accept three different cryptocurrencies to support folks, and they are Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. I'll repeat those, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. QR codes are on the page. You point your device at them and do your fang. And we accept checks or money orders as well, folks, and they are to be made payable to Revolution Radio. That's two separate words. Revolution, R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N, and Radio spelled R-A-D-I-O. And then they are to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman. Terry spelled T-E-R-R-Y and Ackerman spelled A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. At 1793, that's 1793, North Eden spelled E-D-O-N Road. And that's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, Michigan, M-I, 49227. Now, the details for the snail mail options and the Patreon are also available on the main homepage to where I am returning. Whence I'm returning. And, of course, we receive a healthy number of visitors on this website of ours, folks. The lovely monster has reinstated accounts, and I'm so excited about it. I just get very excited about it. It's fabulous. It currently reads 26,596. Before Monster did the revamp on here, and the old count had well surpassed 500,000 views. I suggest that it's probably the true representative viewing of this site, of the station site rather, is including the other site, is well in excess of 500,000 now. But the count needed to be reset. For when the revamp took place. So yeah, currently reads 26,596. And you can advertise on the station's website, folks, and they are for $25 a month. As you can see, we do receive a healthy number of visitors per day. So you need to contact the station's GM, A Mad Painter, using the following email address, which is themadpainter13@yahoo.com. That's themadpainter13@yahoo.com. And don't forget our archives, folks. They're free to access for the foreseeable. You can reach them either by clicking on archives on the nav bar or going direct to its URL, which is www.revolutionradioarchives.com. I'll repeat that, www.revolutionradioarchives.com. And then you need the username and the password, both of which are lowercase and case sensitive. Username is Rev Radio, that's R-E-V-R-A-D-I-O. And the password is Rocks exclamation mark, R-O-C-K-S exclamation mark. Don't forget that exclamation mark, folks, because without it, you won't get in. I'm telling you that right now because I admitted it and didn't get in. But again, a big, big thank you to you all, folks. We are truly, truly grateful to you for your support. Thank you very, very much indeed. So. The doors are now open to the cozy nook that is Willow's Poetry Corner. And today we're returning to the world of 19th century American poetry for a study of one of its most innovative of talents. He was a novelist, short story author, and a war correspondent. Died at the tragically young age of 28. His notable works include his novel from 1895, The Red Badge of Courage, and his poetry collection from the same year, which was The Black Riders and Other Lines. He was born in Newark, New Jersey, and his name was Stephen Crane. Now, I'm going to start off with Wikipedia, because there's two items I've got open on him. There's the Poetry Foundation, that, which is going to be a great study of him. He didn't half remind me of somebody looking at this picture of Stephen Crane. He really does remind me of somebody. But anyway, but I'll start off with Wikipedia's opening paragraphs on Stephen Crane first, and then I'll be wandering over to Poetry Foundation's study of him as well, which is rather wonderful. And if time allows, I'll be looking at some of his poetry as well. So Stephen Crane, this is from Wiki, November 1st, 1871 to June the 5th, 1900, was an American poet, novelist and short story writer. Prolific throughout his short life, he wrote notable works in the realist tradition as well as early examples of American naturalism and impressionism. He is recognized by modern critics as one of the most innovative writers of his generation. The ninth surviving child of Methodist parents, Crane began writing at the age of four, and he had several articles published by the age of 16. Having little interest in university studies, though he was active in a fraternity, he left Syracuse University in 1891 to work as a reporter and writer. Crane's first novel was the 1893 Bowery tale Maggie, A Girl of the Streets, generally considered by critics to be the first work of American literary naturalism. He won international acclaim in 1895 for his Civil War novel, The Red Badge of Courage, which he wrote without having any battle experience. In 1896, Crane endured a highly publicized scandal after appearing as a witness in the trial of a suspected prostitute, an acquaintance named Dora Clark. Late that year, he accepted an offer to travel to Cuba as a war correspondent. As he waited in Jacksonville, Florida for passage, he met Cora Taylor, with whom he began a lasting relationship. En route to Cuba, Crane's vessel, the SS Commodore, sank off the coast of Florida, leaving him and others adrift for 30 hours in a dinghy. Crane described the ordeal in the open boat. During the final years of his life, he covered conflicts in Greece, accompanied by Cora, recognized as the first woman war correspondent, and later lived in England with her. He was befriended by writers such as Joseph Conrad and H.G. Wells. Plagued by financial difficulties and ill health, Crane died of tuberculosis in a Black Forest sanatorium in Germany at the age of 28. At the time of his death, Crane was considered an important figure in American literature. After he was nearly forgotten for two decades, critics revived interest in his life and work. Crane's writing is characterized by vivid intensity, distinctive dialects, and irony. Common themes involve fear, spiritual crises, and social isolation. Although recognized primarily for The Red Badge of Courage, which has become an American classic, Crane is also known for his poetry, journalism, and short stories such as The Open Boat, The Blue Hotel, The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky, and The Monster. His writing made a deep impression on 20th century writers, most prominent among them Ernest Hemingway, and is thought to have inspired the modernists and the imagists. There we go. Nigella Lawson. Yeah, that's another great. Yeah. Yeah, sorry. If anybody's wondering, why is she talking about Nigella Lawson? Yeah, so I've just noticed that Lizzie's just mentioned Nigella was one of the, yeah. So we're now going to go to Poetry Foundation's study of Stephen Crane, which is rather wonderful. And hopefully there'll be time to explore some of his poetry as well. Stephen Crane was one of America's foremost realistic writers, and his works have been credited with marking the beginning of modern American naturalism. His Civil War novel, The Red Badge of Courage from 1895, is a classic of American literature that realistically depicts the psychological complexities of fear and courage on the battlefield. Influenced by William Dean Howells's theory of realism, Crane utilized his keen observations, as well as personal experiences, to achieve a narrative vividness and sense of immediacy matched by few American writers before him. While The Red Badge of Courage is acknowledged as his masterpiece, Crane's novella Maggie, The Girl of the Streets from 1893, is also acclaimed as an important work in the development of literary naturalism and is often anthologized short stories. The Open Boat, The Blue Hotel, and The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky are among the most skillfully crafted stories in American literature. Crane also authored a single collection of poetry, The Black Riders and Other Lines, from 1895. In a review written at the time of the publication, the reviewer acknowledges, "Mr. Crane is a true poet whose verse, long after the eccentricity of its form has worn off, fascinates us and forbids us to lay the volume down until the last line has been read." Born in Newark, New Jersey, Crane was the youngest in a family of 14 children. His desire to write was inspired by his family. His father, a Methodist minister, and his mother, a devout woman dedicated to social concerns, were writers of religious articles, and two of his brothers were journalists. Crane began his higher education in 1888 at Hudson River Institute and Claverick College, a military school where he nurtured his interest in Civil War studies and military training. Throughout his college years, Crane wrote, working as a freelance writer for his brother's news service, and it is thought that he wrote the preliminary sketch of Maggie while still at Syracuse University. In 1891, deciding that humanity was a more interesting study than the college curriculum, Crane quit school to work full-time as a reporter with his brother and part-time for the New York Tribune. In New York, he lived a bohemian existence among the local artists and became well acquainted with life in the Bowery. From his first-hand knowledge of poverty during this period, he was able to realistically depict tenement life in his writings. In 1893, Crane privately published his first novella, Maggie, under a pseudonym after several publishers rejected the work on the grounds that his depiction of slum realities would shock readers. According to Crane, Maggie tries to show that environment is a tremendous thing in the world and frequently shapes lives regardless. Critics suggest that the novel was a major development in American literary naturalism and that it introduced Crane's vision of life as warfare. Influenced by the Darwinism of the times, Crane viewed individuals as victims of purposeless forces and believed that they encountered only hostility in their relationships with other individuals, with society, with nature, and with God. Also prominent in his first novel is an ironic technique that exposes the hypocrisy of moral tenets when they are set against the sordid reality of slum life. Although Maggie received the support of such literary figures as Hamlin Garland and Howells, it was not a success. It was not until 1896, after Crane tempered the brutalities in a second edition, that the work received wide recognition. Crane's second novel, The Red Badge of Courage, won him international fame. His vision of life as warfare is uniquely rendered in this short, essentially plotless novel. Often compared to Impressionist painting, The Red Badge of Courage is a series of vivid episodes in which a young soldier, Henry Fleming, confronts a gamut of emotions, fear, courage, pride, and humility in his attempt to understand his battlefield experiences. In this respect, Fleming represents the everyman of war. Crane's work employs a narrative point of view that distinctively offers both an objective panorama of the war as well as the more subjective impressions of the young soldier. Since he had never been to war when he wrote The Red Badge of Courage, Crane claimed that his source for this accurate depictions of combat was the football field. When he finally experienced battle as a war correspondent, he said of the novel, "It was all right." Critics have long debated whether The Red Badge of Courage should be considered a product of any specific literary movement or method. The work has been claimed by several schools and is referred to as realistic, naturalistic, symbolistic, and impressionistic. Proponents of realism view The Red Badge of Courage as the first unromanticized account of the Civil War and find Fleming's maturation from an inexperienced youth to an enlightened, battle-worn soldier to be truthfully depicted. Defenders of a naturalistic reading contend that the youth's actions and experiences are shaped by social, biological, and psychological forces, and that his development as a character is incidental to Crane's expert depiction how these forces determine human existence. Stylistically, Crane's novel contains elements of both impressionism and symbolism. For example, some critics note that the red badge of courage is laden with symbols and images, while others explain that Crane's episodic narrative structure and his consistent use of colour imagery are indicative of an impressionistic method. A succinct estimate of this debate is offered by Edwin H. Cady. The very secret of the novel's power inheres in the inviolably organic uniqueness with which Crane adapted all four methods to his need. The Red Badge's method is all and none. There is no previous fiction like it. Shortly after the publication of the Red Badge of Courage, Crane published the poetry collection The Black Riders and Other Lines in 1895. Although not widely known, this volume of free verse foreshadowed the work of the Imagist poets with its concise, vivid images. During this time, Crane continued to work as a journalist, traveling throughout the American West and Mexico for a news syndicate, and later using his experiences as the basis for fictional works. Returning to New York, Crane wrote The Third Violet, the story of bohemian life among the poor artists of New York. In 1897, Crane met Cora Taylor, the proprietor of the dubiously named Hotel de Dream, combination hotel, nightclub, and brothel. Together as common law husband and wife, they moved to England, where Crane formed literary friendships with Joseph Conrad, H.G. Wells, and Henry James. Shortly after this move, Crane left to report on the Spanish-American War for the New York World, an assignment he accepted, in part, to escape financial debts he and Cora had accrued. Although Crane was ill when he returned to England, he continued writing fiction in order to satisfy his artistic needs and to earn money. With Active Service, published in 1899, he produced another flawed work. This war novel, based on his experiences as a war correspondent in the Greco-Turkish War, is often described as uneven and sprawling. By 1900, Crane's health had rapidly deteriorated due to general disregard for his physical well-being. After several respiratory attacks, Crane died of tuberculosis at the age of 28. Although Crane achieved the pinnacle of his success with the Red Badge of Courage, many critics believe that he demonstrated his greatest strength as a short story writer. His major achievements in this genre are The Open Boat, The Blue Hotel, and The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky. The Open Boat is based on Crane's experience as a correspondent shipwrecked while on a filibustering expedition to the Cuban revolutionaries in 1897. The naturalistic story pits a handful of men against the power of the indifferent but destructive sea. Crane's characteristic use of vivid imagery is demonstrated throughout this story to underscore both the beauty and terror of natural forces. According to critics, Crane is at his best in The Open Boat, maintaining an even tone and fluent style while conveying a metaphysical identification between God and nature. Crane's facility with imagery is again displayed with telling effect in the tragic story The Blue Hotel. In this deceptively simple Western tale, the Swede, one of Crane's most interesting characters, becomes the inevitable victim of his own preconceptions about the Wild West. Fearing a lawless, uncivilized world, his violent reactions to Western life result in his own death. Thomas Gullison described Crane's depiction of the Swede as almost Dostoevskian in its psychological penetration. In another Western story, the comic The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky, Crane parodies the shoot-em-up Western myth as the characters Jack Potter and Scratchy Wilson fail to fulfill romantic illusions through a gunfight. In these short stories, as in most of his work, Crane is a consummate ironist, employing a technique that most critics find consistently suggests a disparity between an individual's perception of reality and reality as it actually exists. Commentators generally agree that, for the most part, Crane disregarded plot and character delineation in his work and that he was unable to sustain longer works of fiction. However, with the proliferation of Crane's scholarship during the last 20 years, Crane's literary reputation has grown. Critics contend that despite his minor flaws, Crane's artistry lies in his ability to convey a personal vision based on his own sense of integrity. In so doing, He pioneered a modern form of fiction which superseded the genteel realism of late 19th century American literature. In 1988, a collection of Crane's letters was published in the Correspondence of Stephen Crane. Whether the material in this book has provided scholars with new insights into Crane's thinking or mere confirmation of what was already known, scholars have been disappointed that the correspondence sheds no light on the question of which version of the Red Badge of Courage is the most authentic. For example, scholars speculate whether the famous last line of the novel, "Over the river a golden ray of sun came through the hosts of leaden rain clouds," was Crane's intended ending, or was written at the suggestion of his editor. Silence on this point in the correspondence of Stephen Crane is perhaps consistent with what Andrew Del Banco, writing in New Republic, suggested would be Crane's likely attitude towards such questions. One sees what one prefers. There we go. I'll just post that one there in the chat room. I think I've got time to have a quick look at one of his poems. I think there's time to look at one of his poems, shall we? "Saw a Man Pursuing the Horizon." It's a short one. "I saw a man pursuing the horizon. Round and round they sped. I was disturbed at this. I accosted the man. 'It is futile,' I said. 'You can never—' 'You lie,' he cried, and ran on." I think I've got time for one more. It's a short one again. "A Man Said to the Universe" by Stephen Crane. "A man said to the universe, 'Sir, I exist.' 'However,' replied the universe, 'the fact has not created in me a sense of obligation.'" There we go. Share that one there in the chat room. I think with that one, we'll draw a close to today's Willow's Poetry Corner. I suggest you, really need to wrap up warm to wander down the corridors of the Earth Sciences Laboratory. Got four different articles lined up today, folks. The Earth Sciences Lab. Some of them, as I say, I've had most of these bookmarked for a few months now, but they're still very relevant. And the first one goes back to last year's rather tragic California wildfires. And this is from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory website, posted up on September 14th last year. And it's NASA monitors carbon monoxide from California wildfires. It's just letting you know what they were doing, what they were monitoring. And the graphic here is rather, shows exactly how much was generated. And what the article says of the visualization, the observations from Earth orbit show high altitude concentrations of the gas that are more than 10 times typical amounts. NASA's Atmospheric Infrared Sounder, or AIRS for short, aboard the Aqua satellite captured carbon monoxide plumes coming from the California wildfires last week, which was then obviously the first week of September. There were 28 major wildfires burning across the state as of September 14th. That included the August Complex fire, which started on August 17th and has since burned over 471,000 acres, making it the largest fire on record in California. Now, this is referring to that past September. It's just a reminder. The animation shows 3-day averages of carbon monoxide concentrations around 3 miles, 5 kilometers up in the atmosphere between September 6th and September 14th. Red and orange areas indicate regions with extremely high carbon monoxide concentrations of greater than 350 parts per billion by volume. The more normal background concentrations of carbon monoxide show up as yellow and green, with amounts between 30 and 50 ppbv, as parts per billion by volume. Released by the fires along with smoke and ash, carbon monoxide is a pollutant that can persist in the atmosphere for about a month and can be transported great distances. At the high altitude mapped in these images, the gas has little effect on the air we breathe. However, strong winds can carry it downwards to where it can significantly impact air quality. Carbon monoxide plays a role in both air pollution and climate change. The intense heat from the wildfires lofted the carbon monoxide high into the atmosphere, enabling detection by the air's instrument. The jet stream then blew the carbon monoxide plume eastward across the US and over the Atlantic Ocean. AIRS, in conjunction with the Advanced Microwave Sounding Unit, or AMSU for short, sensors emitted infrared and microwave radiation from Earth to provide a three-dimensional look at Earth's weather and climate. Working in tandem, the two instruments make simultaneous observations down to Earth's surface. With more than 2,000 channels sensing different regions of the atmosphere, the system creates a global three-dimensional map of atmospheric temperature and humidity, cloud amounts and heights, greenhouse gas concentrations, and many other atmospheric phenomena. Launched into Earth orbit in 2002, the AIRS and AMSU instruments fly on board NASA's Aqua spacecraft and are managed by NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, under contract to NASA. And JPL is a division of Caltech. Latest carbon monoxide data, as well as other information from NASA Earth observing missions, can be viewed at the fully interactive Eyes on the Earth, which I haven't been to for a while. With the latest events feature, you can explore geolocated satellite images of recent Earth events, including algal blooms and wildfires. That's interesting then. I'll have to have a look at that one. So that was authored by Jane Geely and Ian J. O'Neill, I think, the article. It's just a reminder of what they were monitoring last year, more than anything, from last year's wildfires. It's just so you know what they're doing. The next article is from the Eindhoven University of Technology's website. Posted up on September 18th last year and authored, I'm just trying to find the author, I believe is Hilde van Genoopten Delut. Sorry, I can't read. And this is a fascinating article. Headline, Defying 150-Year-Old Rule for Phase Behavior. And it says five different phases found in mixtures of two substances. So frozen water can take on up to three forms at the same time when it melts, liquid, ice, and gas. This principle, which states that many substances can occur in up to three phases simultaneously, was explained 150 years ago by the Gibbs phase rule. Today, researchers from Eindhoven University of Technology and University Paris-Saclay are defying this classical theory with proof of a five-phase equilibrium, something that many scholars considered impossible. This new knowledge yields useful insights for industries that work with complex mixtures, such as in the production of mayonnaise, paint, or LCDs. The researchers have published their results in the journal Physical Review Letters. The founder of contemporary thermodynamics and physical chemistry is the American physicist Josiah Willard Gibbs. In the 1870s, he derived the phase rule, which describes the maximum number of different phases a substance or mixture of substances can assume simultaneously. For pure substances, the Gibbs phase rule predicts a maximum of three phases. Professor Remco Tunier of the Institute for Complex Molecular Systems, at the time, Einstein called Gibbs's thermodynamics the only theory he really trusted. If we take water as an example, there is one point, with a specific temperature and pressure, where water occurs as gas, liquid, and ice at the same time, the so-called triple point. Assistant Professor Mark Vies, from the same research group as Tunier, adds, "This classic Gibbs phase rule is as solid as a rock and has never been defied." According to this phase rule, the mixture studied by the researchers would also exhibit a maximum of three phases at one specific point at the same time. But Tunier and his colleagues now show that in this mixture there is a whole series of circumstances in which four phases exist at the same time. There's even one point at which there are five coexisting phases. Too many, according to Gibbs. But that specific one point, also called a five-phase equilibrium, a gas phase, two liquid crystal phases, and two solid phases with ordinary crystals exist simultaneously. And that has never been seen before. This is the first time that the famous Gibbs rule has been broken, Vies says enthusiastically. The crux lies in the shape of the particles in the mixture. Gibbs did not take this into consideration, but the Eindhoven scientists now show that it is precisely the specific length and diameter of the particles that play a major role. Tunier says, in addition to the known variables of temperature and pressure, you get two additional variables, the length of the particle in relation to its diameter, and the diameter of the particle in relation to the diameter of other particles in the solution. In their theoretical models, the researchers worked with a mixture of two substances and a background solvent, rods and polymers. This is also called a colloidal system, in which the particles are solid and the medium is liquid. Because the particles cannot occupy exactly the same space, they interact with each other. This is also called the excluded volume effect. It causes the rods to want to sit together. They are, as it were, pushed towards each other by the polymer chains. In this way, you get a region in the mixture that mainly contains rods and an area that is rich in polymers, explains Tunier. He continues, the rods then sink to the bottom because they're usually heavier. That's the beginning of segregation, creating phases. The lower part, which mainly contains rods, will eventually become so crowded that the rods will interfere with each other. They then take up a preferential position so that they are less in each other's way. With the rods, it looks like a neat arrangement next to each other. Eventually, you get five different phases: a gas phase with unaligned rods at the top, an isotropic phase, a liquid phase with rods pointing in about the same direction, pneumatic liquid crystal, a liquid phase with rods lying in different layers, a smectic liquid crystal, and two solid phases at the bottom. V says our research contributes to the fundamental knowledge about this kind of phase transition and helps to understand and predict more precisely when these kinds of transition occur. And that is useful in many areas. Think of pumping complex mixtures around in industrial reactors, making complex products like colloidal mixtures such as mayonnaise and paint, or ice that forms on car windows and black ice on roads. Even in liquid crystals in monitors, these processes play a role. Most industries choose to work with a single phase system where there is no segregation. But if the exact transitions are clearly described, then the industry can actually use those different phases instead of avoiding them, says Vies. It was more or less chance that the researchers arrived at an equilibrium in more than three phases. When simulating and programming plate-shaped particles and polymers, PhD students Alvaro González-García and Vincent Peters from Tunier's group saw a four-phase equilibrium. Tunier says, Alvaro came to me one day and asked me what had gone wrong, because four phases just couldn't be right. Then the researchers tried out multiple shapes, such as cubes and also rods. Tunier says, with the rods, most phases turned out to be possible. We even found a five-phase equilibrium. That could also mean that even more complicated equilibria are possible, as long as you search long enough for complex different particle shapes. So yeah, the research for this appeared on 18 September in the Journal Physical Review Letters, which was called Defying the Gibbs Phase Rule, Evidence for an Entropy-Driven Quintuple Point in Colloid Polymer Mixtures. So this is sort of Earth Sciences Lab, really. There you go. And next article is from Penn State University's website. Posted up on September 21st last year, authored by Francisco Tutela. And it's headlined, Forest Margins May Be More Resilient to Climate Change Than Previously Thought. So a warming climate and more frequent wildfires do not necessarily mean the Western United States will see the forest loss that many scientists expect. Dry forest margins may be more resilient to climate change than previously thought if managed appropriately, according to Penn State researchers. The basic narrative is it's just a matter of time before we lose these dry, low elevation forests, said Lucas Harris, a postdoctoral scholar who worked on the project as part of his doctoral dissertation. There's increasing evidence that once disturbances like drought or wildfire remove the canopy and shrub cover in these dry forests, the trees have trouble coming back. On the other hand, there's growing evidence that there's a lot of spatial variability in how resilient these forests are to disturbances and climate change. The researchers studied forest regeneration at four sites that had experienced wildfires in the eastern Sierra Nevada mountains in California, The site sit at the forest margin, a drier area where forest meets sagebrush grassland. These dry forest margins may be the most vulnerable to climate change-driven forest loss, according to researchers. Large fires in the area tend to consume the forest starting from the steppe margin then sweeping up the mountain, says Alan Taylor, professor of geography and ecology who has worked in the area for decades. You wouldn't see forest anymore over 10 or 20 years, and it seemed like the lower forest margin was getting pushed way up in elevation because it's so dry near the sagebrush boundary, Taylor said. My research group wanted to look at this in detail because no one had actually done it. Harris and Taylor's research team measured tree diameters and litter depth, counted the number of seedlings and saplings, and identified tree species at the research sites. They also quantified fire severity, the amount of moisture available for plant growth and water deficit, an indicator of drought intensity. They then fed the data into five models to see how the probability for tree regeneration varied based on fire severity, climate and location, and remaining vegetation and canopy cover. They reported their results in the September 21st edition of Ecosphere. The researchers found that 50% of the plots, that's 50% of the plots at the site, showed signs of tree regeneration. And water balance projections through the end of the current century indicate that there will be enough moisture available to support tree seedlings. The key is to prevent severe fire disturbances through proper management, according to the researchers, because tree regeneration was strongly associated with mature trees that survived fires. In these marginal or dry forest areas, management approaches like prescribed burning or fuel treatments that in the forest can prevent severe fires that would push this ecosystem to a non-forest condition, said Taylor, who also holds an appointment in the Earth and Environmental Systems Institute. The study suggests that those low-severity disturbances could actually create very resilient conditions in places where most people have been suggesting we'll see forest loss. The researchers also noticed a shift in tree composition from fire-resistant yellow pines to less fire-resistant but more drought-resistant species like pinyon pine. They attributed the shift to drying and fire exclusion policies in effect over the last century. The shift could be beneficial if a species moving in is better suited to present and near-future climates, said Harris. However, it could be dangerous if a bunch of fire-sensitive species move into a place and then it all burns up. Many trees would die, and we could see lasting forest loss. California's climate is projected to warm, but many climate models also forecast an average increase in winter precipitation, especially in the northern part of the state and in the mountains, continued Harris. On the one hand, you have greater drought intensity for sure. But also, you're going to have these wetter periods where there's more moisture available for tree growth in the spring and maybe into the early summer, he said. So if the trees are able to survive that drought stress and take advantage of the additional moisture present in some years, they might be able to maintain or even expand their distribution. This forest system is important for recreation, carbon storage, biodiversity and wildlife habitat, said Taylor. It also comprises part of the western side of the Great Basin, the largest area of contiguous watersheds that do not empty into an ocean in North America. There's not much forest in the Great Basin, which is a huge area of sagebrush grassland in Utah, Idaho, Oregon, Nevada, and Arizona, Taylor said. So the forests of the eastern Sierra Nevada mountains represent a significant component of the forest found in that system. Okay, I'll just share that one there in the chat room. And hopefully I've got time for this last one. I should have. Then again, these articles generally tend to be quite lengthy. So I should be able to do it. I'll give you a rough idea of what it's all about anyway. This is from the European Space Agency's website, posted up on 22nd of September last year, and it's our seas are capturing more carbon than expected. So Earth's oceans help to slow global warming by absorbing carbon from our atmosphere, but fully observing this crucial process in the upper ocean and lower atmosphere is difficult, as measurements are taken not where it occurs, sea surface, but several metres below. New research uses data from ESA, NASA and NOAA satellites to rectify this and finds that far more carbon is absorbed by the oceans than previously thought. So So much of the carbon dioxide emitted by human activity does not stay in the atmosphere, but is taken up by oceans and land vegetation, so-called carbon sinks. There are ongoing efforts to collect and compile in situ measurements of the ocean sink in the form of the Surface Ocean CO2 Atlas, or SOCAT, which contains over 28 million international observations of our oceans and coastal seas from 1957 to 2020. By delving into SOCAT's vast database, scientists can identify how much carbon is being sucked out of the atmosphere and stored by our seas. However, there's a catch. The measurements are not made right at the ocean surface where they are needed, but from a few metres down, explains Andrew Watson of the University of Exeter, UK, lead author of the new study. Although the difference may be mere metres, the sea surface temperature changes with depth, and so, too, does its associated ability to absorb carbon from the atmosphere. Previous studies have ignored the small temperature differences between the surface of the ocean and the sampling depth, but we know that this has a significant impact on how carbon is held by the oceans in terms of salinity, solubility, stability, and so on, adds Andrew. But satellites can measure the temperature more or less exactly at the ocean surface, and when we do this, we find it makes a big difference. By applying satellite corrections to SOCAT data from 1992 to 2018 to account for temperature differences between the surface and a few metres depth, the researchers find a substantially higher ocean uptake of carbon dioxide than previously thought. Anyway, it's held you who did it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to skip that bit and then go. Corrected figures reveal that the net flux of carbon into the oceans is underestimated by up to 0.9 gigatons of carbon per year, a significant amount that at times doubles uncorrected values. So these results are consistent with independent estimates of the size of the oceanic carbon sink, those based on global ocean surveys by research ships, adds co-author Jamie Shuttler, also of the University of Exeter. Now that these two separate estimates of the size of the carbon dioxide ocean sink agree pretty well, we can view and use their results with greater confidence and trust that they are most likely giving us an accurate picture of what is going on. That gives you pretty much the nub of it. The article, so there's more to it, but that gives you the nub of the gist anyway. We're coming up to the top of the hour now, folks. Got plenty going on both studios tonight. Tell you what's happening here first. I'll be handing over shortly to the mechanic, who's going to be on with the Common Denominator, and following the mechanic at 5 p.m. will be Deacon John with Liberation Nation. Following Deacon at 6 p.m. will be Dennis Fetcher with Inside the Eye Live. And following Dennis at 8 p.m. will be Chuck Gregory with The New American Dream. Rounding off the evening here on A will be David Devine with Mini Ice Age Conversation. Over on Studio B, the next live show is going to be at 6 p.m. and that's Mario with This, That and the Other. Following Mario at 8 p.m. will be Mr. Rowe with Reality Extraction. And rounding off the evening on B will be J. Charles Parker with The Centrepath Matrix Warriors. Seeing in the Day over on B at midnight will be Dave Scott with Spaced Out Radio, and Seeing in the Day over here on A will be Keith Roberts with Keith AZ Live. And I'll be back with you on Sunday morning on Studio B at 9 a.m. Eastern with Willow's Weekend World. I've got all sorts of goodies lined up for the weekend show, folks. All sorts of goodies covering a variety of different topics. So, anyway, you all take care. Thank you for being with me this afternoon, and I'll see you on Sunday morning. You all take care.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
We're now anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a civil majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
You're what?
Come here.
What are you going to do, bleed on me?
I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Hi, everybody. It's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock.